The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
To kick things off this morning, we're going to leave Ireland and have a look around Europe to see how the rest of the continent is getting on. I'm joined on the line, first of all, by Thomas Sparrow, Deutsche Welle political correspondent. We'll be joined by Graeme Keighley, Spain correspondent for The Independent, and Hugo McCafferty, an Irish journalist based in Italy. You're all very welcome to the programme. Thomas, the situation in Germany, it is complicated by the fact that there are so many different state administrations. And it appears there's now a move to try and consolidate it all under federal authority.
That's absolutely correct. So Germany has 16 different regions, and the leaders of each one of those regions are actually in charge of implementing coronavirus measures. And what has happened in the past is that regional leaders have met with the German chancellor on a wide variety of measures and circumstances to decide on measures to fight the coronavirus pandemic. But what has happened after that is that then each region independently decides whether they implement what has been agreed on or not. And this has led basically to a patchwork of measures across the country and to a lot of confusion in Germany. In fact, if you judge by recent surveys, you will see that a majority of Germans actually have lost track of what measures are in place, where and when. And that's why the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, in particular, has been trying in recent days to implement uniform measures by adopting a law, an infection control law, which grants the central government authorities to implement these restrictions uniformly in Germany, irrespective of whether the regions or the 16 regional leaders want to or not. And this is what we're witnessing now in Germany, this amendment to the control infection law.
There had been calls for Angela Merkel to use her political influence now. She's stepping down. She doesn't have to look over her shoulder at any competitors since she will be gone in the autumn. So why not do the right thing and do it quickly?
Well, because it's not so easy here in Germany to do things quickly. She also has to consider the situations in the different regions. And yes, you're right, Pat, when you say that Angela Merkel is leaving the German chancellery after the elections in September. But she also wants, on the one hand, to leave a good legacy. Her legacy, at least when it comes to the coronavirus management, has been not very good if you judge this third wave of the coronavirus pandemic, in particular if you compare it also with the first wave, where Germany actually did comparatively well. And on the other hand, even though she will not step as candidate for chancellor, her party, the CDU, and her conservative bloc with the Bavarian CDU have also lost popularity in recent weeks. So it's also in her best interest to make sure that she leaves her conservative bloc in a very good position to at least retain the chancellery when we have those elections, those all-important elections in September.
Now, on a practical level, since between the states there is a seamless border, very much like the situation in Ireland between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, is it possible, for example, that someone living in one area could look a few hundred metres down the road and see a school-going child, whereas schools might be closed in that area? Or, for example, being able to go to a restaurant in one area and 100 metres down the road not be able to go to a restaurant. Is that how difficult it's been?
Yes, it is how difficult it's been. So what you see, for example, or what you saw in recent weeks is a certain region or even a certain district reopening garden centres, whereas the neighbouring district couldn't reopen the garden centres. So you had what was described here as pandemic tourism. And this is one of the reasons why this has become so difficult for German authorities and also so difficult for Chancellor Angela Merkel, because you have actually this patchwork of measures where even within districts you have different possibilities, where schools in one district are open, schools in the next district are not. And that has given way to a lot of confusion here in Germany, hence the need from Angela Merkel and the federal government to implement these uniform measures.
One of the forces at work, I suppose, the lobbyists at work, is a group representing those who study aerosols. And they seem to be trying to get the government to acknowledge that outdoor living is so much safer that's what the concentration should be on. And if there are going to be rules and regulations going forward, it should be about how to live indoors, masking indoors, ventilation systems indoors, and really let outdoor take care of itself.
That's absolutely correct. These groups or these aerosol experts actually sent an open letter to the German Chancellor and to German officials stressing that what they should focus on mostly is what happens indoors, not outdoors, because they say that most infections happen indoors and most of the very important infections, for example, when you're talking about schools or when you're talking about old people's homes, actually happen indoors and not outdoors. So the focus should not be on whether people should be wearing a mask outdoors while they're riding their bikes or whether they should have curfews at night in Germany, that the focus should be actually in trying to make sure people comply by the rules and follow the guidance when it comes to indoor activities, meeting other relatives, for example, going to school, when to visit grandparents when if they're in an old people's home, that kind of thing, instead of focusing on mostly on what is happening outdoors. This letter by the aerosol experts has been commented and debated a lot in Germany because, as they point out, part of the debate here in Germany has not only been about what happens indoors, but also about how to control what happens outdoors. And especially as Germans try now to spend more time outdoors with the weather getting better, this is something that has certainly generated a big debate here in the country.
Now, the metrics by which you can judge the stage of the pandemic, the number of cases per day, the number of people in hospital, how crowded the ICUs are, how is Germany faring by those measures?
In fact, last week, the German health minister and the head of Germany's public health institute, the Robert Koch Institute, pointed to the fact that Germany's ICU units are having a very difficult time and that explains the urgency by which Germany now has to act to bring those numbers down. If we judge by the numbers, you will see that in the last 24 hours, there were nearly 22,000 new cases. That's over 124% increase if you compare it with the previous week. The seven-day rate is 153. This is particularly important because it's this seven-day rate which determines whether a district or a region has to go back into tighter restrictions. So it's 153, which is well beyond the 100 limit that the authorities had established. And you have over 400 hotspots here in Germany, 400 districts that are considered now hotspots. There is one caveat, Pat, and that is that because of the Easter break, this image is not very clear. So some of the infections are only registered afterwards, were not registered at the time that they happened. So the picture is still very much blurry when it comes to actually finding out how bad the Easter holiday was for Germany and what the current situation is now. The other side of the story is vaccinations. We already spoke here on the program earlier that vaccinations had been a big problem here in Germany, that it was going very, very slowly. Well, it seems now that it's speeding up and it's speeding up at a very good rate. So yesterday, for example, you had 530,000 vaccinations. It's the fourth day in Germany with over 500,000 vaccinations in one day. This has to do to a large extent with the fact that now GPs and family doctors can also administer coronavirus vaccinations, which is seen as a very positive development here in Germany.
Is there any issue with supply, and what is the reaction to AstraZeneca still and now the Johnson & Johnson suspending deliveries in Europe for a while?
Obviously, these are two issues that are still a matter of concern here. Supply has been, as you know, a big problem not only for Germany but also for other European countries. And now you have to add the issue of Johnson & Johnson also being a problem here. However, the focus here in Germany has not necessarily been in the last few days on supply issues, but on how to speed up the delivery of vaccinations to all the different regions and districts. And that's why I was mentioning that the focus has been on that development last week, which now allows family doctors and GPs to also administer the jabs. Although, obviously, as you mentioned correctly, there are certain concerns about delivery issues because ultimately, these family doctors, these thousands and thousands of practices, will have to get the vaccines delivered to them before they can actually administer them to the general population.
Thomas, thank you very much for joining us. That's Thomas Sparrow, Deutsche Welle political correspondent. Graham Keighley, Spain correspondent for The Independent, listening to that. Good morning, Graham. How are things in Spain? Let's start with vaccinations. How far is the rollout going?
The rollout is going sluggishly, I'm afraid to say. So far, only less than 10% of the population have had at least one shot. Now, the government wants to speed this up dramatically in the second quarter of the year by administering 5.5 million doses. And they say that by the end of August, they should have at least 70% of the population vaccinated. One big blow to this has come overnight with the news from America that the Janssen vaccine was being suspended, or paused rather, after some reports, isolated reports of blood clots. The Spanish government found out about this through a press release from the company. That has come to, as a bit of a blow. However, it may not. There may be enough vaccines from other manufacturers to tide them through, at least in this quarter.
Now, in terms of infections, and again, Spain is a big country, so it may vary across the geography of Spain. How is Spain coping with the latest surge?
Well, unfortunately, there has been a surge, probably because of Easter. Last night, the two-week figure for contagions was 196 cases per 100,000 population. This has gone up from about 128 in the middle of March. Spain was making real progress there. It had got down the figure from 900 at the end of January to 128, but now it's going up. And the fears of obviously that this is going to top 200. So, you know, it's a serious situation, and some of the progress has been lost.
Now, there is what they call a state of alarm or a state of emergency, which officially ends in May. Will it end in May? Will they declare it over, or will they have to extend it? And if it does end, is it likely that different regions will do their own thing and lift restrictions as they see fit?
The government has said they will not extend it beyond May the 9th. However, this may be because there is a regional election in Madrid coming up on May the 4th. This election has become a national issue because the conservative authorities in Madrid have made one of the cornerstones of their policy disobeying, if you like, the socialist or left-wing government of Spain with much more lax policies. It's believed, many people think, that the government is delaying saying whether they will actually extend this because they don't want to make it into an election issue in Madrid. Some regions have asked the government to extend the state of emergency. If they don't, then it will come down to regions to decide what restrictions they can or cannot make with regards to their citizens. And it may become a bit of a hodgepodge of regulations from one area to another.
Now, we know how important tourism is to the Spanish economy. And there are particular regions. But I'm wondering, has there any thought been given to trying to vaccinate everybody in the Balearics, for instance, or in the Canaries, and therefore at least keep the natives safe, irrespective of who might arrive for holidays on the islands?
Yes, there has. And I spoke to people from the tourism industry in both those places last week, and they were saying, look, we are very hopeful that they will allow the Balearics, at least first off, to become an exception to the national situation in Spain and allow more tourism to start there in the middle of the summer, and possibly the same situation in the Canary Islands, because they say basically our infection levels are far lower than the mainland. We saw this situation last summer, but now we have the vaccine, and that's what changes the picture. So they are hopeful that if they can up the vaccination levels in the islands, then this may allow tourism to restart there where it is desperately needed.
All right, Graham, look, thank you very much for joining us. That's Graham Keighley, Spain correspondent for The Independent. Hugo McCafferty, an Irish journalist based in Italy, is on the line. Hugo, good morning.
Morning, Pat.
Now, we were making much of our own island status and how we were compromised because we had that border with Northern Ireland when their rates were very high. We're still an island and we look to other islands to see how best they might keep the coronavirus at bay. The islands in Italy, off Italy, are looking to do a bit of business in that regard this summer.
Yeah, well, some of the smaller islands are looking to try and emulate what they're doing in Greece, which is aim for a COVID-free strategy, vaccinate all the locals and then open up for tourism, because tourism is so important in regions in Italy, not only for the economy, but also, I think, psychologically for the Italians. I mean, it really is the June, July, August months are the highlight of the year. And I think you'll see everything now kind of geared towards opening Italy up not only to tourism, but also opening up for domestic markets, because it's been a long year for Italians.
Sure. I mean, it all started there in European terms, at least in Bergamo. Some WHO scandal bubbling there, a whistleblower in the WHO. Are you familiar with that story, Hugo?
Somewhat, yeah. I mean, we had an Italian executive has whistleblowed against the World Health Organization, saying that the report that he had written criticizing Italy's failure to update their pandemic protocol for 14 years was suppressed by the World Health Organization. This has been around for a while, and I suppose it will continue to bubble along. But he has since resigned from his position, and I guess we'll just have to wait and see how this plays out. I think first and foremost, people just want to see everybody vaccinated and return to normality, and then we can sort of pick through the bones of what happened.
And no doubt they'd be doing that in many countries. What about the vaccine rollout? I'm not sure which was the prominent vaccine. Was it Pfizer or Moderna or AstraZeneca? J&J hasn't been delivered yet in Europe. But the rollout of the vaccine, how many people have been done and which vaccines are they using?
Yeah, so it feels achingly slow at this stage. It's they vaccinated 13.3 million people. Now, Italy started very well. They vaccinated their frontline healthcare workers very, very quickly. But then, of course, what happened, much like Germany, Italy has devolved its powers regionally over the last 10 years. So every region took a different strategy. And what we had was a kind of a haphazard approach. And what we also saw, particularly in the south, there's some corruption there. And we saw that certain people from different age groups, not vulnerable people, skipping the queue. So we actually had in certain regions a rate of vaccination for people in their 30s that was the same as people in their 80s. Also in Italy, the unions are very strong here. And of course, we had the teachers, we had the judicial system, all threatening, you know, nationwide strikes if their workers weren't vaccinated. And what happened as a consequence of that was that a lot of the people who were in their 80s, who were recently infected, were left suffered because of it. And what we had was a really, really high death rate with nearly...
Isn't it also the case, Hugo, that the mafia were implicated in, because they, in certain parts of Italy, they penetrate even government fairly thoroughly, and they were diverting supplies either, I don't know, to sell on the black market or just to give to their pals?
Well, the mafia is always implicated in Italy, and you can be sure that they are involved in every aspect of Italian life. And they have also, in regions in the south, infiltrated the healthcare system. So it's kind of just a fact of life in Italy that, you know, the mafia will be operating in the shadows. But yeah, that came out in the news for sure.
Now, Italy's on the list of countries that need to go into quarantine in Ireland should people arrive. We may be adjusting the rules depending on whether people are vaccinated or not, because the hotels, believe it or not, that they had organised are full at the moment, because when you're there, you have to stay up to 14 days. So the capacity you need when you've got so many thousands of people coming into Ireland every week would be utterly enormous. But anyway, any reaction in Italy to being forced to hotel quarantine in Ireland?
I have been following a number of social media groups of Italians living in Ireland and some Italians who are moving to Ireland for work, and they seem a bit dismayed about it because despite everything, Italy has remained open and quarantine has not been enforced on people entering Italy. So they seem a little bit perturbed by having to do that. But I suppose, look, needs must. Ireland is in the unique situation of being in an island, and maybe perhaps if they'd enforced quarantine earlier, the situation might have been different.
Yeah. Finally, I should ask you about how the hospitals are coping, because we all remember those terrible images from this time last year, when literally there were dying people on corridors and medical personnel in tears at what they were beholding. How are things today?
I mean, it's still very bad. While the rate of infection is falling, the death rate has remained stubbornly high. We've had, at some cases, like 1,000 people dying over the course of 2 days. That is just it's unacceptable, and it's very bad. Anyone who I've spoken to working in ICU they're still out in their feet. It's still, you may not be making the headlines, but it's still like a crisis in the ICUs for sure.
Now, although the median age of death is around 82 in Ireland, which means half the people who die are over 82 and half of them who die are under 82. But, you know, you get someone of age 46 dying, and you might get someone of age 96 dying. But it does seem our ICU rate and our death rate is going down, largely because all the nursing homes, the personnel and the residents have been vaccinated. Is that an incomplete process in Italy, and is that why the death rate is, as you put it, so stubbornly high?
Yeah, now I think they have. I saw that it was last week, Premier Mario Draghi held a press conference basically pleading with all the regions to abandon their plans and to adopt a vaccination plan based on age first. And it seems to be that is the right strategy. That is, they are making their best efforts to move in that direction. So hopefully, I think if supply is holds up, we'll see a more coherent strategy. Hopefully, things will ramp up because the Italians will be looking to vaccinate certainly everyone over the age of 70. By May.
Yeah, and that AstraZeneca use, I mean, are they specifying the age group for which that might be appropriate?
Yeah, they've abandoned for younger users, and they're saving AstraZeneca for people over the age of 60. But also AstraZeneca has, for various different reasons, trust in the AstraZeneca brand has plummeted in Italy. Some people are refusing it, which has also hampered the vaccination rollout. So we'll just have to hope that this news about Pfizer passes quickly and that it's
About Johnson and yeah. Okay, look, Hugo, thank you very much for joining us. Hugo McCafferty, an Irish journalist based in Italy. Now.